the platform. Step up and speak out.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the platform. I am your host, Brian Malvin K. Sitole. Tonight, we cast our analytical lens across the Zambezi to reflect on the monumental August 13, 2026 Zambian general elections, with the Electoral Commission of Zambia, ECZ, officially declaring incumbent President Hakainde Hichilema of the United Party for National Development, UPND, the winner of that election with 60.49% of the total valid votes. The country has marked another major chapter in its democratic journey. However, the election was not without significant institutional, structural, and political debates. Opposition candidates of various parties have said they are not accepting the results, creating a disputed outcome. Join me live on this program all the way from Lusaka, Zambia, to provide reflections on this historical outcome is Dr. Nevas Mumba. He is the president of the New Nation Party, as well as an alliance partner of the UPND. To those who know Dr. Mumba, we all know that he's not new to Zimbabwe. He's not new to politics across the Zambezi, because he was the chairman of the SADC team, SADC Electoral Observer Mission team that observed our own polls in 2023. Good evening, Dr. Mumba, and welcome to Zimbabwe and to ZFM Studio. Let me say, Mulishani Tata.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the wonderful, warm welcome. And also, thank you so much for having me. I look forward to this engagement tonight.
Right. I'm also glad that you could join us. And before we get started, let's just talk about the general mood. You're coming from elections. We know how elections can be. You were with us when we had our own elections in 2023. So you know how it is. What is the mood currently in Zambia now that the results have been announced? You know, people have campaigned. There's been a lot that has happened in the past couple of months. What is the mood like in Zambia right now?
Well, it has just happened. The results were announced yesterday. So basically, there was celebration in almost every part of this country. If you look at the demographics involving the election, how it panned out, you can see that President Hakainde Hichilema had great representation in almost every province. And therefore, the celebration was widespread. Obviously, like anything else, when you have a 60% victory, then you also must remember that you have a 40% negative. So the 40% is also expressing itself in the manner that reflects deep disappointment, because their person they wanted to be in office has not managed. But generally, I think the mood in the country is quiet. People have celebrated, continue to do so, but things have gone back to normal. It's a normal working day today, and people are starting to pull themselves back together. And so Zambia has a culture that we have an election, we fight back and forth and, you know, speak to each other with a raised voice. But once the election is over, Zambians know how to always get back together and pursue what is in the interest of all Zambians. And that's exactly what they have done.
All right, Dr. Mumba, you almost preempted into my next question. You did speak about...
I apologize.
No, that's fine. It's part of the conversation. I was going to say that you did preempt into my next question, which was around how the leading opposition candidate, based on the results announced, Brian Mudubile, does feel about the results. He feels that the elections didn't go well, and he plans on challenging the results in court, according to what he has stated. Does this not place a dent on the win that you're talking about? Does this not create division within the country and dampen that excitement that you've referred to?
I think that that particular singular act by or intention, I'm not sure they are going to follow through with it, but in case they do, it does not stand in the way of who what Zambia stands for. and how we have respected the democratic values and how we have handled ourselves. As a matter of fact, the very fact that the option of petition remains as a viable option in itself is a contribution to the democratic process of our country. The very fact that democracy has created within its own infrastructure the possibility of one going out there and petitioning when he doesn't feel satisfied with any part of the election, any section of the election. So for us, we don't think it's outside the democratic culture to petition. I think that it's the best way to proceed instead of people getting on the streets, throwing stones and being violent. Zambians have opted to find their answers in institutions that we have created for ourselves.
So you feel that it's within any aggrieved party's rights to be able to approach the courts and to challenge this? And you're confident from what you're saying that the outcome, whether the one goes through the courts, will still be the same, right?
Yeah, well, listen, I don't think there'll be any shift in the outcome. We are very, very careful on how we handle elections. And I think integrity in the electoral process in Zambia is one of the most significant things which makes Zambia Zambia. To the extent that if somebody feels aggrieved in one way or the other, we actually encourage them to go to the courts of law, because we also want to ensure that there's no compromise in the integrity of our electoral process. So I think for us, we do not look at petitions as a way of saying someone, the election was not good. We just think that anything put together by human beings is not going to satisfy everybody, that it's, you know, especially if you lose, you'll have to look everywhere and make sure that you're satisfied that the loss was real and justified. So we are not worried about that. I think, you know, they should proceed. I'm not sure they will, but I think they should if they are dissatisfied.
All right. It's your show, The Platform. I'm your host, Brian Marvin Kesole, here on ZFM Stereo, my station, your station. And we're reflecting on the recently held Zambia general elections. And I am joined by Dr. Nevis Mumba. He's no stranger to Zimbabwe. In fact, he's one of us because he was here with us during our 2023 harmonized elections. He was the leader of the election observer mission representing SADC when we had our own elections. And now the tables have turned. Now we are talking about elections in his own country.
Now on the other side of the table, right?
Yes, he is. I remember you giving your report. We'll talk about that a bit later. But before we do that, the 2026 elections in Zambia, this was the first election to be held under the Constitutional Amendment Act number 13 of 2025, which altered the electoral landscape by increasing National Assembly constituencies from 15 to 226. From a quantitative standpoint, how did this expansion affect the UPND's campaign efficiency, deployment, budgets, and local mobilization structure? Did this contribute to the losses of key seats that the UPND used to enjoy in parliament?
Well, listen, first of all, I must state that this is the first time we are doing a mixed representation system. Therefore, we are delving into fresh waters that we have not experienced before. So basically, it's a wonderful democratic experience for us. We have done our investigation. My own party, the New Nation Party, fought hard to ensure that this piece of legislation was put in place. So it is something that we have studied for many years. Many commissions in Zambia have recommended that we do have this type of government and a represented, mixed represented parliament. How has that affected the UPND Alliance campaign? Well, except for the magnitude of the campaign, basically we have now got 226 seats in parliament as opposed to 156, which we had before. So you can see that is a huge jump. placing a lot of pressure financially, logistically, on every political party that participated. But the UPND Alliance really has not had much of a problem because we have fielded candidates in all the 226 constituencies and in the more than 1,800 wards and mayors in the 116 districts of our country. And each one of them was represented by a candidate. It is not true for the opposition. I think it was a very heavy load to lift for a lot of opposition members. The closest one, by Honorable Mundubile, did not field in like something like 76 constituencies. And basically it shows the logistical nightmare that was encountered by many, many political parties that participated. But having said that, I think that there's a level of excitement that we have brought to the fore now for the first time, that delimitation has allowed that we further divide our country into more developmental blocks so that development in our country can be enhanced and doubled. Secondly, this bill has also brought, or this act has also helped us to ensure that those with less of a voice in the governance of our country are now given a voice. Here we are talking about the women who for many years are not able to fully participate because some of them are not economically strong on their own, but also that the violence that surrounds the campaigns has moved women away from this enterprise of governance. The same for the young people. Their economic muscles are not as big as those that belong to the other men that have been in this game for a long time. The persons with disabilities have also been given a quota to be brought into the house. So basically, we are truly, truly excited about this new phenomena and cannot wait to see how this thing is going to work out. But we are happy that the underprivileged, the voiceless, and those that were not represented are being brought on board so that they can also be true stakeholders in the affairs of the governance of our country.
All right, Dr. Mumba, I would want us to talk about the environment, the electoral environment itself. There have been several media reports that have come about that have focused around the use of state machinery to silence the opposition following suspension of vote counting. There have been reports that the army has been deployed to target opposition individuals from the opposition. We have heard of members of the church being arrested, the church being a very strong voice in terms of ensuring that we maintain our integrity. As countries, we've heard of opposition, individuals from the opposition being targeted, being abducted, and later on the state coming to say, no, these people have been genuinely arrested. These are things that the incumbent President Hakainde Hichilema complained about prior to the 2021 election. Do these allegations hold water? Have the state machine been unleashed on opposition individuals so that they don't freely express their voices during this electoral cycle?
Let me answer your question in blocks. President Hakainde Hichilema, myself, and the whole team of the Alliance, we are totally committed to ensuring that this election is truly free and fair. And Sadiq has said that, really, it is free and fair. But let me be clear that President Hakainde Hichilema and myself in particular, we went through quite a lot in being abused and democracy being denied us during our time in opposition together. And we made a decision during those times when we were not even allowed to campaign. Personally, my party was having meetings in the bush, in the mountains, because they couldn't allow us to have meetings anywhere. So one of the resolves that we made was that God giving us an opportunity to lead and govern this country, never again should any Zambian opposition or ruling or any Zambia for that matter be treated in a manner that he's disadvantaged or abused in his own country. So that's the position of President Hakainde Hichilema up to this day. His own experience, the dark season that we went through, made us make that resolve. Now let me come to your question. There are certain things that need to be made clear. There's an election that is going on, which has been going on very well. We have been campaigning for the last 90 days, and we entered into this election with very little drama in terms of activities that are like violence and none of that. It has been one of the smoothest campaigns, except for a few, you know, things that happen amongst human beings. But generally, it's
a few things, you say.
Yeah, there are times when there are, you know, the members of from different political parties clash on the campaign trail, but it's nothing that would have such an impact on the overall look of the campaign. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Okay.
So, having said that, let me clear something that I'm hearing, that, you know, members of the opposition are being disadvantaged, they're being arrested, they're being abducted. That is political language that is coming into play. Unfortunately, we have had to deal with a situation that was not even anticipated. And that the situation is that there is a security problem that has emerged in our country. And the government made a statement 2 days ago to mention the fact that, you know, we have been dealing with an issue of a security nature for many years. But over the past few weeks, there was a heightened tipping off from the public that there were certain things that were happening that hinged on the very security of our country. And in the pursuit of trying to find out what is going on, once there was a movement towards a house where it was identified that there were people there that were planning some things, unfortunately, they found those people they were looking for, the dissidents that were looking for, who were planning. And of course, you know, there was a lot of stuff there that they were using as a militia. But unfortunately, they found some members of the opposition in that place. And so when they arrested those dissidents, they arrested them together. Not that they went for the political leaders. They didn't even know the political leaders were there because they were not the ones they were pursuing. And so they found them there. So they took them into custody. But I must also be quick to say that the candidate, Honorable Brian Mundubile, although he was found in that mix, he was not arrested. It was a decision made, there's an election going on, and it is important that he's free. And if there are going to be any questions to be asked him, it has to be after the process of this election. So he has not been touched at all.
And
but others who were found.
And the arrest of Bishop Trevor Mwamba?
Bishop Trevor Mwamba, unfortunately, he was in that group. So they didn't go after a bishop. They didn't know he was a bishop.
They
just
didn't
arrested
know.
No, absolutely not. The people, the operation that took place did not necessarily go for any civilian. They did not even think they were going to find, like, the political party people there. They were shocked themselves to find that the political people were part of that arrangement. So that can only be dealt with by the courts of law. And I may not be able to give you enough or satisfactory information. But the reason I've said it is to let you know that that has nothing to do with the integrity of the election. The election took place within the confines of the democratic infrastructure that has always guided us as Zambia. Unfortunately, along the same time, there has been this operation that has happened at the same time when we're having the election. And the security wings cannot wait and say, unless the election finishes, that's when we're going to do this. Because security is a daily commitment by those who govern. So please let those two things not be one. They are separate. And those who are innocent, they're definitely going to be let free after the court process. And we are not going to delve into what is already in the hands of the security wings.
All right, that's fair. That's a fair point that issues that are before the courts, we cannot discuss them at length. That would be sub judice. But I want to go back to the reports that have been given. And congratulations, by the way, I've read the SADC Election Observer Mission report. For the greater part, they agree that the election was held in a free and fair manner. However, the SADC Election Observer Mission, combined with the one that came from African Union, as well as the EU, also a mission did raise concerns regarding a constrained democratic space and uneven media playing fields, as well as other concerns that they have in terms of issues to do with violence and the arrest of opposition leaders. This is coming from the three reports. I was just picking a few issues that I noted. There's some of the issues that you also raised when you came to observe our own elections in 2023 as the head of the Election Observer Mission. How do you feel about this coming from Zambia as well, the same issues being raised by your peers, especially SADC and the African Union?
First of all, I just want you to appreciate the fact that I have explained the issue of the security thing.
And then the media.
And also the issue. Well, again, like I said when I was in Zimbabwe, and this gives me an opportunity, the role of an observer mission is to observe, and if they see something, they report about it. They're not saying, we hate you, we don't like you, you're not a good country. They're just saying, especially for us, SADC, I don't know about the European Union, SADC, we are peers. When you come to Zambia, you say, you can improve in this area of maybe the media. But I think the media space has been open to, as far as we know, to everybody. And I do not know at any point when any leader from the opposition was stopped from appearing on any media, because our media is predominantly private media. So everybody is on some sort of media, campaigning. But again, there's always these questions that are asked by us who are the observers. And all we are saying is that in your next election, please make sure that you improve on this issue. We are not saying that we don't like you or that your democracy is not working. We are just saying that we think this can be done better according to the guidelines of the SADC. And I think that's what the report says. And I am very, very comfortable that we have had an opportunity to have a free and fair election that has been run alongside the same way that we've run all the elections in our country. Does it mean everything was perfectly done? Maybe not, because everything conceived of a human being has got some flaws. And that's why we have observers to help us to say, next time, please improve in this area. And that's really all that observers do.
Right, Doc, I'm glad you mentioned the fact that you do have quite the greater chunk of your media spaces privately owned. I appreciate you've got more than 70 radio stations. You're doing very well as a country in terms of the private media. However, some of the issues that the EU flagged out as an example have been that the state-owned media campaign has remained heavily skewed in favor of President Hakainde Hichilema's ruling UPND. That was one of the issues. And also one of the other issues that was raised was that the Cybersecurity and Cyber Crimes Act has been used by authorities to suppress digital dissent. And so journalists and online commentators have faced criminal charges under this law, this vague law as they described it, for publishing private or critical conversations online. So it has not just been about the media, the mainstream media. We are going digital as a globe, and there's a lot that happens on digital platforms. And the thinking was that a lot of journalists around the digital space have faced challenges when trying to also report issues that might not be palatable to the ruling. Your response on that?
Wow, that's a loaded question, Asitole. Let me, first of all, I hope I'll wrap my arms around the very big question that you've asked. First of all, it is important to note that the cyber law that you're referring to was not legislated by the UPND government first. It was legislated by the previous government, which is, of course, now contesting under another name with Brian Mundurire. It's the same people. They just changed the name of the party because they were having problems in their own political party.
Sorry to cut you off, but one of the issues that, again, I'll refer to the 2021 elections, one of the issues that that President Hakainde Hichilema mentioned, I followed the Zambian elections, was the issue of lawfare. He mentioned that laws are being used to target him as an opposition leader. So if you are telling me that the law was promulgated by the Lungu administration, does it then make it right for President Hichilema to use it against his opponents?
No, he's not using it. He's not using it. Listen, I'll speak for myself as a president of the New Nation Party, who is an alliance partner. I am one of those who pushed for this legislation. The legislation, Zambia, first of all, is a Christian nation. We don't apologize about that. And it's in our constitution as a Christian nation. We conduct and hold ourselves to certain values, Christian values of respect, honor, and not going to social media to insult or lie about somebody blatantly and allow social media to be a sewer of lies and let people make decisions based on lying political players. So if you're a politician who is moral, a politician who carries a vision for this country, a politician who can choose words to use and speak the truth, the cyber laws don't affect you. But in Zambia, we have had a situation where somebody said, I can't even insult. If I can't insult, then the cyber laws are stepping on my human rights. But your human rights stop at the beginning of another person's rights. So really there for us as a Christian nation, we have agreed amongst ourselves that it's unfortunate we have a law there. But even if we didn't have a law, we'd push to make sure that political players are civil in the manner in which they campaign. So trying to create a civil society based on godly values and exchange of respect and honor in the manner in which you do the election. If somebody says you are standing or stepping on my freedoms, I do not think so, because the person that you are lying against also has freedoms. So I think that there is no one who is stopped from campaigning, making very clear what he wants to do when he takes over government. Nobody stopped. So, nobody stopped.
I agree with you.
Even if somebody was arrested for that cyber law, if really it is not right, the courts will free them to say, no, they're allowed to say this. But I cannot say that President Hakainde Hichilema made this law in order to subject his friends to that lawfare, as you call it. No, not at all. As a matter of fact, he has vowed that what happened to him, he will not repeat that it happens to others deliberately from his administration. That's his position.
All right. Thank you for clarifying that. It's your show, The Platform. Unfortunately, we are running out of time, Dr. Mumba. I'm just hoping that you are amenable to a part two of this conversation, because I think 30 minutes is not enough to have such. But before I let you go, it's important that we talk about the event that happened on Friday, August 14, when the ECZ suspended vote counting in some areas due to isolated reports of violence and ballot theft. By its own admission, this is the arbitrator, this is the one that is running the election, coming out and telling us that ballot papers have been stolen, the Gen 20 forms are missing, we are suspending counting. And then later on, the same commission is coming and giving us a result. How credible is that result after we have learned that there have been some tampering that has happened by the admission of the same commission?
First of all, just to help you before I answer the last part of the question, is to let you know that the suspension of the counting is within the ambit and the powers of the Electoral Commission of Zambia. That's number one. Number two, the violence that started to take place in the polling stations, and this, the taking of the votes and the ballots and tearing them apart, throwing them and running away with them, was becoming a major risk in the integrity of the electoral process.
And the credibility.
The credibility. And they didn't want that to spread anywhere. So they needed to have time to secure all the polling stations in another way that none of that spreads to other places. But you must also understand, arising from what I said much earlier, it was actually at the same time we had that other security problem in the nation that I referred to. It was happening alongside the same time. And, the security wings advised the Electoral Commission of Zambia to hold off for them to be able to put in place an infrastructure of security to be able to protect the citizens of this country. That's number one. Finally, to answer the question, how does that affect the integrity of the vote? No, it doesn't. It has not affected the integrity of the vote, especially the presidential vote, because in some of the constituencies, they are still cleaning up that mess, and they have not announced the results in a constituency or two here in Lusaka. But for the presidency, the way that they announced the results is that there is a provision in the law that the announcement can be made if there's a constituency still not accounted for, two or three, as long as their numbers are not going to have any particular impact on the outcome of the election. And that power is given to the Electoral Commission. But most of the votes are in. I think we only had a problem with 1.5 constituencies, which are going to be added to the final tally at the appropriate time.
All right, thank you for clarifying that. And as we conclude the show, like I had mentioned before, I hope you are amenable to a part two, because I really want to... there's a lot that we're supposed to discuss, but unfortunately we couldn't do that in 30 minutes. Are you going to be available for us to have another one of this conversation, Dr. Mumba, before I ask you my last question?
Yeah, but, you know, we have to work on another day, right?
Yes, definitely. But now, no problem, as we conclude this one, on a positive note... the Alliance has won this election according to what has been presented to us by the ECZ. What do the next 5 years look like for the Zambians? Because there's been a lot of, there have been some concerns that have been raised. I've been to Zambia a couple of times myself, and, you know, around the cost of living and how it's affecting the ordinary person. So what is your message to an ordinary person in Kangwala South, somebody who's listening from Patamato, somebody who's listening from, you know, the areas? What is your message of hope to them now that the Alliance has been given a second chance to govern?
Well, I'm glad you know Zambia that well.
I do.
Yeah, I can tell. Listen, this is one of the most exciting periods and seasons in our country. The first 5 years were what we call the heavy lifting. As you are aware, of course, we were so in bad shape in terms of the economy that, you know, we could not even pay our debts because we defaulted in our debt repayment, and the economy was really going down. So the job of the president was to start to reorganize the economy and do a debt restructuring so that we can have a breather in terms of running the economy, because the amount of debt we're supposed to be paying, or payments, we're equating ourselves almost very close to the GDP at some time, and it was going to, to the budget per year, and we were going to collapse as a country. So the president has managed to bring the integrity back to the economy, and that now Zambia is being viewed as one of the most steady nations economically, with the strongest, with the most bullish currency in the world. It's very strong. The kwacha is strong. It's been consistent. The inflation rate has been dropped from 24% to 6.5%. The interest rate has been brought down. The GDP has grown. The mining industry is back on track. And there are goals that this president has put in place that within the next 10 years, the next 5 years, Zambians should expect that our power generation, which sits at 4 gigawatts now, is going to go to 10 gigawatts. These are the goals that we've set for ourselves. Then we also have, in terms of maize production, this year we produce 5 million tons. Our goal is to start to produce 10 million tons. So we have set goals for ourselves in the next 5 years. We now receive about 2.5 million tourists. Our goal is to start to receive 5 million tourists. We also know that copper production now is about 980,000 metric tons. Our goal is to start to produce 3 million metric tons every year, and we are almost moving there at the moment. These are things we are looking forward to. 3 million tons of soya production in the next 5 years, and 1 million tons of wheat production in the next 5 years. And we have also worked and started to work on a $1 billion beef export for our country. So I think there's an excitement in the air. What this means, this thing that we're talking about, it means that we create an opportunity for investors to come into our country. Mm-hmm. We create an opportunity for jobs to be made available. This quantum of production definitely has a direct impact on the pricing of commodities, making sure that the commodities are going to be much cheaper than they are now. And we are hopeful and confident, actually, that the Kwacha will continue to be as strong as it is, and that Zambia will be a place to go to. In the next 5 years, we should be able to have a great story to tell the world.
I was just going to say that some of those investors are your cousins from the south, Zimbabweans, eh? I'm sure you're going to be...
Oh, yes. I mean, we...
yes.
Look, we have a marriage between Zimbabwe and Zambia that nobody can divorce. Mm. We are one people, and I love it. That's why you know Zambia so well. You're even knowing it better than Zambians in the way you're mentioning our town. So, thank you so much.
Dr. Mumba Namitotela Sana, I really appreciate your time, and I look forward to a part two of our conversation. For now, I'm going to allow you to have a good evening. Unfortunately, this is all the time that we had as we draw curtains on this segment of the platform on ZFM Stereo. It is evident that Zambia's 2026 elections offer a profoundly complex case study for democratic consolidation in the SADC region. While a 60.49% mandate provides a solid base for President Hichilema's second-term governance, resolving the structural, economic, and institutional questions raised by observers and opposition forces remains crucial for long-term national stability. A special thank you to my guest, Dr. Mumba, who was with me in the studio, with me online. Unfortunately, we've come to the end of this episode, of this segment of the show. I'll be right back after this. Do stay with us.
The platform. Step up and speak out.
Welcome back to the second part of the platform. I'm your host, Brian Marvin Kesetole, and this part is brought to us in partnership with Comfort. And it's important that we mention that we are stepping into territory that society too often shuns. We are breaking the taboo on menstrual health, dignity, and period poverty. Period poverty and menstrual taboos aren't just women's issues. For information, that is why I am discussing them. They are human rights issues affecting education, economic productivity, and mental well-being across Zimbabwe. To have a conversation around that, I am joined in the studio firstly by Coach Ruvarashe. She's going to introduce herself in full a bit, but she's a dynamic social entrepreneur and founder of Youth Vibes Africa, as well as a Ridge menstrual health consultant. Good evening, Coach, and welcome to ZFM Stereo.
Thank you, Brian, for hosting us, and good evening, Zimbabwe.
I'm so excited that you could come. You're Coach Ruvarashe?
Yes, I'm Coach Ruvarashe, and I work with different young people across Zimbabwe, across the borders, as well as globally. So that's the interesting part of being a coach. And I focus mainly in transformational life coaching, which is very amazing, and most people don't really understand it, but I hope I'll tackle it later on.
I'm also joined by Celani. Is a powerful voice representing Kama Comfort Alumni Network. She's here with us. Good evening, Celani, and welcome to ZFM. And a little bit about yourself.
Thank you so much, Brian. Evening, everyone. Yes, this is Celani from Matabeleland South in Zimbabwe. I'm proud to be here representing Comfort Association Alumni Network, and I'm a leader. I am a community leader as well as the Pan-African chairperson for the Business Growth Committee, which supports Girl Child, making sure that girls get access to education. Thank you so much.
Great. Now let's get into our conversation, and I'll start it with Coach Ruvarashe. Through your work at Youth Vibes, as well as your work as a consultant, as a menstrual health consultant, you interact closely with young people. What are the most damaging myths or cultural taboos surrounding menstruation that you still see hurting young girls today?
A very good question, Brian. Well, the three myths we need to challenge are that menstrual is actually dirty, and that menstruating girls and women should be restricted from normal activities. And the other thing is that severe menstrual problems are something that simply that simply needs to be endured by everyone. But let me tell you that these are not the beliefs. There are so many things when it comes to education, when it comes to just being yourself, and the myths goes on and on to simply say you can't even exercise, you can't even cook, you can't even do normal things when you are menstruating. And let's talk about religion as well. You can't even attend certain religion places. And when we look into Africa, the five regions, it all depends with the culture as well as the religion.
All right, the three myths, I'm sure we've all heard them, and it's important that we are sensitive when we're dealing with issues to do with menstrual health, and we are also factual in the way we go about it, as Coach Ruvarashe has mentioned. Now, coming to you, Celani, as a member of KAMA, you see the direct realities in rural and marginalized communities. How does the stigma around periods physically manifest in a young girl's life, especially regarding her education and attendance at school?
Powerful. That's a powerful question, Brian. And thank you so much. So I would like to present this answer in three powerful ways, which is the health-wise, education-wise, as well as the social and psychological effects. So under health-wise, using unhygienic materials like newspaper by these girls, because if you don't get access to a sanitary pad, you end up, the girl end up using other things that are available, which can be a newspaper, rags, or reusing pads without proper washing, which can cause infections, skin rashes, and even long-term reproductive infections, which is very bad to a girl. And then under education-wise, we have got absenteeism by these girls. A girl comes to school, she doesn't have enough pads, then she stains. It affects that girl. And the girl might end up saying, oh, I would rather miss school during my periods, which is 3 to 5 days per month. And that's add up to 60 days, which is 2 months in a year, which makes them fall behind and even end up dropping out because of this stigma. Poor concentration also by this girl. You imagine you are in a class, then you put a rag, and we are talking about school learners. They are young. Some of them are adolescents. And are you aware that nowadays girls start menstrual cycle even at the age of 10?
Right.
They do not know which is the proper material I can use. As for me, at this age, I can use cotton. I know that. But this girl can put even satin, which cannot hold enough. And ending up what? Staining the skate. What does that lead to? Naming her by other learners. You know, in Isindebele, at that side, you'll be called Nazdamba, mother of stems.
Because of those stains.
Imagine the effects. If you are in Form 1, it means that that is a long-term effect. Every year, up to Form 4, you'll be called mother of stems, Nazdamb. Nazdamb. What does that lead us to? That girl ends up dropping out of school. Because school, instead of becoming a safe place for her, it becomes a deteriorating place.
That's a shame. Yes. And because of this, we also see, while I still have you on this, Celani, we see girls coming up with coping mechanisms. Sometimes they are hiding, sanitary ware when they buy it, newspapers. Sometimes, you know, they are ashamed to talk about it when they are going through their monthly menstrual cycle. It's taboo. How do we change this so that this is something that's my daughter, for example, I mean, can come and talk to me about it and say, Dad, can you buy me some sanitary wear? It's a normal conversation in the home.
Yes.
What can be done?
You know, hiding pads, that system to these learners is something that is very affecting negatively. It teaches girls that their body is something to hide. Imagine, they're not free.
if a child starts being not free from the age of 10, what are we saying about that girl's future?
Hmm.
You see? So that creates anxiety every month. The girl asks themselves, will people see me? Will I leak? Will I be loved? So as karma mentorship, girls, remember, Brian, we are talking to not just a person who is representing these girls from afar. You're talking to someone who passed that stage. Mm. Someone who was once that girl.
He have walked in those shoes.
Someone who walked that path, you know. So in karma, that's why we came up with these strategies, because girls, during this mentorship, girls tell us, oh, this content is constant worry. It affects my confidence. It affects my class participation. And it even has a long-term effect to their health problems, you see. So, it's not easy. We need to normalize it the same way we talk about other health-related issues.
Hmm.
It should be just generous, you must.
And really, that's when we'll say, Gunzima Svili.
Gunzima
Svili. Let me come to you, Coach Ruvarashe, and ask you the same question. How does these subtle coping mechanisms, how do they affect the girl child psychologically?
So this comes in a whole spectrum, to simply say a woman is actually defined in a certain way. From that age of menstruating, where we call it men at the first period, a whole different story is starting. And it's not a one shoe size fit. It differs from the environment, from your background, from who's educating you as well. And just yesterday, I'm so glad to actually give a shout out to Life Grassroots in Lomboshava, as well as the fellow coaches that I was with yesterday in Lomboshava, Coach Mungati, Coach Florence, as well as Coach Eva, where we were actually donating sanitary wear. In donating that sanitary way, I remember we pegged some of the pads in a black plastic bag. That's where my story is coming. And I'm just thinking, why did we actually peg it in a black plastic bag? So already, ourselves as the advocates or as the experts, we also shun or we also hide away or behind menstrual health. And we do not buy menstrual pegs like we are buying bread. But I've noticed that with my mentees, I'm always moving with my mentees as well. And I always tell them that whenever we are buying this sanitary wear, let's just buy them as if we are buying bread. Let's move around. Let's continue to educate. Let's continue to actually advocate and raise awareness when it comes to menstrual health. Yes, the issues are there. They will never be solved in one night or in one day. I remember when I started the whole journey of being a menstrual advocate, it was in 2017. But up until now, we are still talking about it. But one thing that I would commend and simply say I'm very honored and happy about is that we have more platforms to talk about menstrual health. We have more advocates. We have more people who are talking and making sure that, like, to commend our government for a say, it's actually zero tax when it comes to all sanitary wear that comes within the country. And we also have young people organizations who are buying machinery to actually produce our own products that are being sold right here in Zimbabwe, Harare.
And was another question that I want to bring to you, Coach Ruvarashe, based on your work. Social media is a powerful tool for young people today. How are you as a coach, as a youth vibes, as a consultant, also leveraging digital spaces to break down generational taboos? And what pushbacks or resistance have you encountered online?
Oh my goodness, that question is so much. But to just break it, I always tell young people, especially the ones that I work with, to say at Youth Vibes, we say keeping the vibes lit and keeping the roots alive. So that means we are optimistic in terms of what we believe. So if we target to say we want to have sanitary wear for a certain community, we want to raise awareness for a certain community, we are geared on to continue. And then when it comes to simply saying social media, definitely we are using all the platforms, be it Facebook, Twitter, now called X, of course, WhatsApp. We are there, and we've been posting on stories, Instagram. So it's not advertising, but I'll simply say you can follow us on all the social platforms. You see some of the works that we are doing, as well as Comfort, the opportunities that are there, the work that is being done. And not only, and right now, this month of August, we do have a menstrual symposium that is going to be held on the 29th of August. Mm-hmm. So these are some of the things that are being done physically, regionally, as our chairwoman is actually saying that she's representing the whole of SADC. Those are huge platforms. So it could be from grassroots level, yes. It could be from a country level, regional level, as well as an international level. Because I understand my year when I was exposed to the Society for Menstrual Cycle right there in Atlanta, USA, I didn't know that people would simply come and gather for huge conferences to just talk and speak about menstrual health. The research that is done there, or the research that is being done by different people when it comes to menstrual health, is remarkable, if I may put it that way. Remarkable in the sense that you get to understand the anatomy of a woman. And I like the fact that men are now chipping in. So it's no longer only a matter of women. Men are also chipping in. Imagine the single fathers. What are they doing if they have their daughters? They have to know the anatomy of what? Of their daughters. They have to have the confidence of buying the sanitary wear to their daughters, or it could be their nieces, whatever the case might be. But I love that through social media and the enhancement of AI, as well as the technology that we have, we are able to raise awareness to all the corners of, if I'm to put, for example, with my fellow colleague here, all the way from Mzingwani. You know, we are well represented. We can no longer say this is a Harare thing, this is a Mash Central or Matabeleland thing. It's now an inclusive awareness that is being done. So I'm glad that social media has come to a greater play.
Right, let me come to you, Celani, and bring you into this conversation. I know that CAMFED focuses heavily on dismantling barriers to girls' education. Now let's bring this into our conversation around menstrual health and talk a little bit about access, affordability, and issues with period poverty. When a family has to choose between buying a bag of maize meal or a pack of sanitary pads, a family in Mzingwani, where you come from, what happens? What alternatives are girls forced to turn to? You know, it's that time of the month when we are now doing our groceries. We've got $40 to spare, and we have to prioritize what we are buying.
Yes.
How does that play out?
That is a powerful question, Brian. It's a powerful. Right. Obviously, if a mother can say, let's buy mealy meal. Because that's the only thing that this money can buy, and there is no other money for sanitary wear, I cannot say she's wrong. She's right, because if we can look at it's the family members. Let's say it's a family of five, and the other family members are boys and whatsoever. So, of course, buying food always comes first. However, it is what we want is a situation whereby the community, the family, it is said that charity begins at home. The family itself should budget dignity. By saying budget dignity, I'm saying they should budget for sanitary. Make sure it is included, so that this child feels included. Because if this child feels that that separation, or that moment of being put aside in the family, what more when it comes to the school setup? What more when it comes to this community setup? So we wish to have a situation whereby a father can include sanitary pads for their daughters on their monthly budget. Or a situation whereby a community headman can say, oh no, in this school, remember Brian, when you're talking about a sanitary health or sanitary hygiene like this, we're not just talking about the pads. It's a long term. There is an issue of toilets, wash facilities in schools. We can find out that in a school set up, a school has got 500 girls, but there are only 6 play toilets or 5 play toilets. And those play toilets do not have a system of locking them. So that is it safe for the child or a girl child wants to change? So let's say that girl has messed up their skates. and they want to change, they'll be afraid. What if someone comes in? So it goes on to say it's not only a matter of a community budgeting on a pet. A matter of a family budgeting on a pet.
Right.
It's a matter of the whole community.
The whole social structure.
Whole society. Mm. The headman saying, no, in this school, there are no lockable wash facilities for these girls. Mm. What do you do? Or the headmaster. When the situation whereby a headmaster says, oh, we need to find at least two lockable rooms for girls. So that when they mess, they can wash.
Hmm. That's powerful. And how do we get to that, Celani? It's the ideal, and that's where we're hoping that we can get to. But how do we make these conversations open? How do we move from a point where these are just women issues? But as you mentioned, the headman, chairman, West School Development Committee, everybody is talking about it. How do we get to that?
Right, we need, like, what we are doing now.
Mm.
So powerful, that's why I managed to come from, imagine the deep
from
society, from Zimwane district.
Yes.
How many hours on the bus, how many buses did I ride to this place? You know, because we need to change it. We have to bring it into open spaces. At Kama, we have got special meetings that we do. We invite men. We invite headmen. We even have male teacher mentors.
Mm.
We have got the parent support groups that we have. So we have got a powerful support system. We have got what is called a mother and father support groups.
Mm.
So these assist us in case there is a gap that needs attention in the communities. And they are community members, community leaders, whom we work together with. We have got also the Kama guide leaders. So in school, we have got what is called learner guides. So these learner guides, they work hand in hand with teacher mentors and these learners. They go to school to deliver sessions. Those sessions, we have got a powerful book in a comfort association, which is called My Better World. So in the places where we are operating, these girls, in that book, there's a powerful topic, which is my powers.
Hmm. All right. That's powerful. You're doing quite a lot, eh? Now let me drop in Coach Ruvarashe into the conversation. As a social entrepreneur, you look at systemic solutions. What needs to change structurally? Based on what Celani was saying, is the solution free distribution of sanitary ware, local manufacturing of reusable pads, or policy change? Where exactly are the wheels falling off the wagon, and how do we bring them back?
Absolutely. So I don't think there is one silver bullet when it comes to this matter. We need a combination of immediate relief and long-term structure solutions. So nowadays we are talking about social enterprise, social entrepreneurship. And I like the fact that we have subsidized sanitary ware that is made out of reusable cloth like fleece and even cotton, poly cotton that is being used. But the first thing is that as we need this free and those subsidized menstrual products, it is important that no girl should miss class because she cannot afford a pad.
Mm.
We still have cotton and we need the production of cotton in our country. We still need more people to come into play and simply say we need the manufacturing and of equipment so that everything can be put in place. And probably the third policy has to change. Menstrual products are very essential when it comes to the health and dignity. And it's not a luxury good, if I may put it that way. It's not something that you can simply say, oh no, I definitely need this. I need to put it on my bucket list because if I don't have it, no. It's actually a biological thing that happens monthly. And when it comes to these matters, it also comes to the point whereby people think that in as much as you do not menstruate, you do not matter.
Yes.
It's also a psychological thing that happens. Mm-hmm. Even when you're menstruating, probably you have a heavy flow. It's also a psychological thing. So we definitely need to look into health policies that can actually address such matters. And when it comes to the fourth structure that I can talk about, which my colleague was also mentioning, it's the wash as well as the education. education about menstruation matters. This was one of the best themes that has ever done globally, which I always love to simply say, we can never talk about menstruation without talking about the education part of it. And as we bring the WASH program into it, the water, the buckets, the clothing that is needed, yes, the soap that is needed, mm-hmm, you know, there's a lot that just comes into this. And we are not talking of people like in the third party. We are talking about us. To imagine us women in this facility right now, to the women who are actually listening to us right now, women who are also about to approach menopause, you know, there are so many things that comes into place. And as I've mentioned, it comes with the first menstrual from the menarche procedure, or from the menarche start of it, whereby you are starting your menstruation up to the time you finish to say, I'm now in my menopause stage. So the systems have to really come into play. And for social entrepreneurs, I know sometimes we need funds, we need grants, we need people who come in and chip in when we simply say we are having a paid drive. People take it serious when people simply say we are doing a paid drive. Yes. And to my fellow advocates, it's not always about having a name or having the fame to simply say, oh, I donated so and so pads to this. What next? Because for one period, a person might need two packs of menstrual pads, and you have donated probably a million to 500 people. There will never be enough. So as we are talking about systems, we need something that is purely sustainable. I wish, and this is my desire, that probably one day sanitary ware will be free in Zimbabwe. Actually, you can simply walk in a shop, you just take your sanitary ware, and actually have washing baths in town. Anywhere, any corner, maybe in boutique, someone who can offer their boutique to simply say, if you just need something, just go there. I appreciate already we have exactly.
I see Rashe is burning. I was yes, Telan is burning.
She really wants Telan to say something.
Please jump in.
Thank you so much, Bright. Actually, when she was speaking, I thought, and I always think about this, that why isn't this community, I can't say the schools alone, why can't we always cry in the meetings saying, oh, there are no desks, there are no chairs, our kids are sitting down. Why can't we also incorporate sanitary pads or menstrual hygiene in the budgets, school budgets?
Let me just ask you this before you continue, because we know that the Education Amendment Act of 2020 stipulates that sanitary ware should be provided. We've heard budgetary and pronouncements by the Minister of Finance speaking to that provision. What are you saying?
They are there.
The ones that are at school, are they being provided or are they not? Is there a gap?
What I have noticed are the WASH facilities, actually the soaps, and I was happy about that. But I know, I think there is need to put more so that we don't find a child being in lack of sanitary way, or a child stained the skates in school. Because it deprives them. It lowers their self-esteem, you know. So
there's a gap. There's need for more. Yes, more can be done. Right? Though we appreciate
together,
what's
the
happening.
Community.
Right.
Remember, leadership is not just about one person.
Right.
We can't wait for only the government to send sanitary. No. I always say leadership is like a football match. You cannot expect number 5 to be the one playing, or the defenders alone.
Or the coach, with
it, the referee. Yes, so it.
And the supporters.
And even the supporters.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So I just wanted you to expand a bit on the issue to do with water and sanitation, because one of the directions that we are taking is one of the main points of advocacy is ensuring that we have got reusable pads. But we still have issues around sanitation. You've talked about availability of clean water itself. Yes. There are issues to do with soap and all that.
Yes.
Do you feel that we can be able to move forward with reusable pads if we still have these gaps, or if we give the girl child my reusable pads, we are creating new problems?
No. I feel we need both approaches. We need these sanitary pads.
we also need the reusable ones. But with the long-term lens, long-term is always the best. Free distribution is critical. Right now, it's an emergency measure that gets a girl to school this month. But for sustainability, we need to invest in local solutions, skills training to make quality reusable pads. So, but most importantly, we need to budget for this, like I said. We should treat these like textbooks and desks.
Yeah.
Basic requirements for education.
Mm.
Not a charity. Because you can realize that when you go with sanitary pads at a school, some girls are shy because they feel like when you're given a sanitary pad, you are poor.
All right.
And we want to run away from that.
I think one of the issues that I've mentioned a couple of times coming to you, Coach Ruvarashi, has been how in the past the issues to do with sanitary wear provision have appeared to be women issues, the girl issues. When you're talking about menstrual hygiene, you expect the boy to leave the room so that you're free to talk about your issues. Yeah. But it's excluding a very, very important demographic when it comes to this issue. How then do we rope in the men and boys? I'll ask both of you, but I'll start with Coach Ruvarashi. How do you think the boy can come in and freely go and buy sanitary wear for his sister, for his girlfriend, for his mother, for whoever needs them? How do we bring men and boys into this conversation?
Absolutely amazing. So part of my work is also working with REGI, which is Re-Inspiration Empowerment Girls Program, where I am their consultant. And not just being their consultant, I also consult other youth-led organizations as well as young people in different communities. And I've seen through the engagements that we have with these various communities, we always say it shouldn't be a women's or a girls forum or a focused group that focuses on girls only. Nowadays, with REGI, we make sure that there's the chief, there's Sabuku, there's everyone that is involved in that community. Baba Ningi, Baba Kutaksho, Pvacho, Baba Vepakona, they're very involved. So men and boys are absolutely crucial. Menstruation may happen to girls and women, but the environment in which we experience it is actually shaped by everyone. And here I like to talk about Ubuntu. Ubuntu actually means that I am because you are and you are because I am. So if we are talking about women, how then should we exclude men in all of this? So I also like our fellow advocates as well, who are also engaging men, coming to platforms like this one, actually sharing their experiences as well as sharing what they are doing in the various communities. So again, as my colleague was saying, this is a human dignity issue, a health and education issue. And the most important thing is that each and everyone has got a crucial role to actually play in it. So we need everyone, the allies, the advocates, the decision makers, the champions. And I like certain organizations, they have the Ye for She. We now have people, Padare, Revarume, discussing about certain issues that happen to their women. Imagine your woman, your wife, your girlfriend, they are on their period. And I like what people are now doing in Harare and other places outside of Harare, whereby if your woman, if your girlfriend is having their menses, they buy them these nice chocolates, boxes full of Getosun, Panadol, aspirin, whatever it may be, even the water bottles. So men, they are getting it. And you know that now people are also getting flowers for just going for their menses. So imagine the comfort that is there. And then there are others who just pamper you. They know that you are having your menstruation. So they make sure that you don't cook. They are the ones cooking. They are the ones making sure that the chores are being done. Because you know what Brian and my colleague here said to the thing is, menstruation comes in various ways. There are others who suffer from endometriosis, which is a painful and crucial pain that a woman has to go through. Some refer them to JECO, but medically it's actually endometriosis. So it varies. Some have mild pains, severe pains, and some they get the shivers, the chills, they can get fever, some get moody. All those things are very, very crucial. So it is important that even us as women, we understand one another. And as men coming in and boys, they also need to understand.
Right.
So,
your thoughts?
Yes. Powerful question. So, yeah. men and boys are absolutely crucial, Brian. They are our fathers. They are our brothers. They are future policymakers. We always surrounded by them. That's why in Karma, we don't call this a female topic. We call it a family and education issue. We run sessions with boys to explain the biology so that they stop teasing and start supporting these girls.
Right.
So when a father buys pets for his daughter, or a male headman allocates funds for girls' toilets, like I said earlier on, that's the real change that we want. Because if we, I feel like if we leave men, we are only solving half the problem. Period dickness affects the whole community. That's my thought.
All right, thank you for sharing that. Unfortunately, 30 minutes is not enough to have this conversation.
Yeah.
We are way beyond that, but we have to sum up now. So I'll ask you both for your parting shot. I'll start with you, Coach Ruvarashi. Your final words as we conclude this conversation. If you want people to get in touch with your organization, how do they do that as well? You can share all that as we conclude.
Absolutely. So menstruation is not just a female topic. It is a human issue. Girls experience the period, but society determines whether that experience comes with dignity or shame. So if you want to get in touch with me as Coach Ruvarashi, Youth Vibes Africa, you can follow us on our social media platforms, which is Facebook, X, WhatsApp, and my number for Youth Vibes Africa, it's actually 0775-952-171. And you can actually email me via coachruvarashi@gmail.com. I also have a website, Coach Ruvarashi. And the amazing thing, we need to continue to advocate, raise awareness, and make sure that Ubuntu continues within our community.
Alani, your parting shot.
Yes. Thank you. So, my last words are, together, let's put dignity on the budget. Dignity in terms of what? Sanitary. I cannot use the word sanitary because, like I said, it's a long term, this menstrual health session. So, to everyone, let's put, be it the government, let's remember to put these lockable wash facilities for our girls. To the family members, let's support our girls. Let us put on our budgets the menstrual hygiene facilities. So thank you so much for this opportunity, Mkoma Brian.
Amazing ladies I've had in the studio today. Thank you so much, Coach Ruvarashi and Celani, for joining me. And Celani has traveled all the way from Umzingwane just to be here live with us in the studio. I just want to say a very special thanks to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Zimbabwe, for the opportunity.
I look forward to future conversations with both of you. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we had for the platform. In the first segment, I had a conversation with Dr. Nevas Mumba, who is an alliance partner for the UPND in Zambia. We're talking about the Zambian elections. And in this second segment, we're talking about menstrual hygiene. We're talking about dignity. And I was joined in the studio by Coach Ruvarashi as well as Celani, who came all the way from Umzingwane. Unfortunately, is all the time that we have. I have to say a special thanks to Setule Dube, who helped us to put this together, as well as my producer Sefiso Mapuranga, who has also made this show possible, as well as our technician Faith Maroa, always running around behind the scenes to ensure that you can hear us loud and clear. It's your show, the platform. I'm your host, Brian Marvin K. Settle. And unfortunately, now I have to leave and pass on the reins to PD the Ghost, who's going to take it up from here from 9 p.m. And so do enjoy your listening here on ZFM Stereo, my station, your station. We'll meet again next week. For now, I'm saying good night. Stay safe. Take care of yourselves and of each other. I'm out.